Welcome back to the Boundary Corner Podcast. Along with Brian Siegel, I am Curtis Wilson. Brian, how are you tonight, big guy?
I don't know how I am. I'm still kind of feeling things out, but I know that Brad Kernelson has a puckered asshole.
Yes, he does. Brian said it on Thursday night. It rang true all day today. Hokies fall 25-24 to Miami. I hate being right tonight. I wanted to be proven wrong, but you know, it's one of those things. I didn't let it ruin my day.
Yeah.
It wasn't a Liberty game. It didn't ruin my day. After the loss, I did a couple things for my wife in the house and then took the boys out and we were riding bikes and throwing frisbees and, you know, kicking balls around and neighbors came up with their kids. The kids played.
One minute into the fourth quarter, my PS5 arrived. So I had plenty to occupy my time once the game was over.
All right. Were you angry though? Like I'm saying, I was mad at the end of the game. Man, it sucks we lost, but I got some stuff I got to do.
I was initially angry, and it was more because of, like, this is the shit that we've come to expect week in, week out. It's like the one thing that we can expect every week is some degree of inconsistency, whether it's on the offensive side, the defensive side, occasionally some snafus on special teams, which are usually isolated to just bad decisions by players. But yeah, man, it's, I was initially upset about that coming off what we saw last week with Liberty. Like it just felt like, you know, another example of snatching defeat from the jaws of victory with this one. It's coaching true. Coaching our way out of a win.
Yep. Not going in long suit. So many different things you can say about the last 2 weeks.
Let's talk about most of that fourth quarter first, and we'll get to I'll finish with the last drive, which just...
Hold on, wait a second. No, you said the end? There were two damn drives.
That's what I'm saying. Like I'm saying the subsequent 2 to 3 drives that kind of closed out this game where we were... You know, you go from driving to potentially going back up 2 scores to being down, then turning the ball over, then getting it back with 2 minutes left, and the shittiest 2 minute drill I've seen
ever,
maybe in my entire life, but it's definitely up there if it's not the worst. So you get the ball, you got 2 minutes, you get a pretty quick first down, and then you it was like 4 plays took 65 seconds.
It did. It was no. What have I said, Brian? Those games we were down multiple scores. Nope. First F-bomb of the night, everybody. No fucking urgency. And you're sitting here, less than 2 minutes.
Just under 2 minutes. Like 149, I think, is when we snapped the first down.
And you're like, go. Go. You should automatically have the play you want. In and go.
Get everybody sitting there, like realigning the protection and having a check with me after the false start snap, and you let 15 seconds run off the clock.
I think it was 17. Get 17. I think it was 17 or 18. You say 15.
I was like, snap it, snap it, snap it. What are you doing? Snap it.
But no urgency. Like this is the game. We have wasted our timeouts. Defense.
And you only need a field goal. You need a field goal.
And we have a guy that can get it there from 50. They've been putting him in bad situations consistently, kicking from 50. But you know what? If it was a 51-yarder, you know, he has a chance to make this. The other thing about the last drive was they were giving middle of the field those last few plays. And I sat there. I saw some people tweet about it, and I thought to myself, shit, at least, you know, run a 15-yard play, go up there, spike it, have 2 seconds, at least a fucking chance to throw it to the end zone.
Chance to throw it to the end zone. I mean, chance to take a really long – if we'd have got it to where it was under a 60-yard field goal, fuck it. Roll him out there and see what he can do.
But no, we had no urgency. It was just kind of like, oh, okay, we got this. We got this. You want to talk about the two-minute drive. The four-minute one is the one that just boggled my freaking mind with the interception.
Yeah.
All day, we have – our drives are like 3 to 6 minutes to score points. This is great. We can run our normal offense. We don't need to go deep. We don't need to go hurry up.
We were eating their lunch in the intermediate game. Completely eating their lunch.
Oh, no. What did our genius OC decide to run?
Let's take a shot, guys. Why not? And it looked like it was some sort of option route, and it looked like Hooker was trying to take well, – thought he was going to take him up the sideline further, and Caleb Smith ran a skinny post, and it was just – All she wrote, man.
But again, it's not necessarily – it's the timing of the play of when it was. It's 4 minutes left. And your defense has, believe it or not – you know, we'll get to the defense in a while. Defense, believe it or not, made a stop or two. There was a late drive, Brian, and I texted you this. Third and 15. And, you know, a couple bad things have happened. But third and 15 – it was essentially the tenure of the Fuente definition. Third and 15, Hendon drops back. The dropbacks looks good. The protection looks good. And you can see the routes developing nicely at one of the camera angles. What does he do? He fucking slips and goes to a knee.
Hits a knee.
That's the definition of the Fuente era right there. It looked good.
Look, you drew it up. It looks nice, and all of a sudden, you fell flat on your fucking face.
Yes.
Metaphorically speaking, fell on your knee. Literally speaking.
Literally fell on your knee, and you had to punt the ball, and that's the one that got me. Because also on that drive, the big play before, because I think it was second and six or second and five, big loss. Is the way Hendon looked, it looked like, you know, that post wheel combo we like to run.
Yep.
He looked that and it made him stay back there. And when I looked at it, he missed an easy little underneath drag. There was, when they showed him going down to that knee, or when they showed that play, they showed a guy coming, not the third and 15, it was the play before that. And I'm looking, I'm like, if he sees that guy, it's a first down and we keep driving.
Yeah.
But we don't do easy things. Brian, let's hit a couple other points here. Obviously, the last drives are really in our memory. Brian, I know one guy that has really not been on his game is Luke Tenuta.
Yeah, I was watching him today. Yeah, I mean, Phillips was eating his lunch all day, man. Phillips was eating his lunch. I mean, we can give props to Darisaw. Darisaw, more or less... took out Quincy Roche as having any impact on the defense, but on the other side, Luke was just—he was struggling, man. And you know, we had talked about it a couple times before this. I mean, Luke hasn't really looked like himself since he's returned from his couple game absence from COVID.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure if that's just that's still pulling on him there, but. When he's been out there, he's struggled, especially with the speed rush, man. Guys that can, you know, turn on the jets and run the hoop, he's really struggled against. And he gave up about three sacks tonight.
Yeah.
Or today, sorry, it's nighttime now. It was today when the game was played.
It's true. He gave up the sacks. He had a couple nice pops, opened some holes in the run game, but overall, he just hasn't looked right. And I don't know if it's conditioning or something like that, but it goes back. This goes back to some of the things we're going to discuss as we get along. We know Vance Fife likes to rotate guys. He likes everybody to be able to be ready to play any position. But when he's looking that bad, you have to just let Doug Nester play. We know Doug can hold his own, right?
Yeah.
And in these kinds of situations, if the game is 42-21 and we're beating the living shit out of them, or they're beating the living shit out of us, yeah, let him stay in there and get his reps. In this case, no. He is a liability right now.
There's close enough of a margin of error where if we can get the right guy in there just to hold another second or second and a half, in a lot of cases, you're talking about the difference between a sack and a potential big play.
True.
You know, a couple times, you know, Phillips got around the edge, and just before Hendon was about to let it go, all of a sudden he's got to deal with a guy in his face and having to, you know, fight off a sack. So, you know, we saw that a lot tonight, guys. And, you know, it's when you talk about a 1-point game, those are the type of plays that could have, you know, potentially won the thing for you. So, absolutely. You know, I don't know what to say here. Let's talk about Hendon Hooker while we're here.
Yeah,
he played a pretty efficient game, but some of that late turnover and a couple decisions kind of, I think, marred an otherwise pretty darn good day for him.
Yeah, I agree. Like, yeah, the intermediate game was working. He was very accurate in that. I mean, you know, you take a look at Hendon today, you know, 202 through the air, 70% completion, 19 for 29. He added another 59 on the ground. With 21 carries, that is obviously not a good average. And it's really bad, Brian. 53 of the 59 came on the touchdown carry.
Yeah.
Do the math. That's like, that's a barely a quarter of a yard a carry after.
They were ready to stop the leads and the powers, and they also sacked him. So, I mean... If you're doing those two things, I mean, other than the one big run where he was able to get to the second level, and once he was at the second level, he made him pay, but he could not get to the second level most of the night.
All right, let's I'm gonna hold off because the inconsistency of the play calls I want to hit later because you know what I'm gonna talk about,
and it
involves Mr. Hooker. Hooker had an okay game. You know, Hooker did not lose us this game.
No, I mean, I don't know what happened on that pick. I don't know what happened on the pick with Caleb Smith. I know he had one ball where he just needed to put a little bit more air.
Yeah. But he played an okay game. He put us in the positions time and time again. Let's flip to him. We talked about Thursday night. Juice Herbert would be a big key. I want to look at all three of the running backs that we primarily play.
Okay.
First of all, I think we kind of know the deal with Juice, the hammy being banged up. He was out there probably 35% of the time of the snaps. Although they didn't run him out there on the first series, he looked okay. To me, it looked like if you told me he had 20 carries today, I think he probably would have had 80 yards. He didn't have the gear to get away where we've seen. There were times he got into the hole and where we'd seen him go, he was getting tackled 8 to 12 yards down the field. And I mean, you know, we take a look at, you know, Juice's numbers today, you know, 8 for 49, 6 yards a carry, his longest was 13. So he was fine.
He was still effective despite not having the extra gear to kind of burst and turn those good plays into great plays.
It's true. But again, it goes back to what we talk about what they're seeing at Luke. We've talked about a couple things where they're seeing at practice. Okay, if he looks like he can do that, the game plan should be, all right, we're going to have to play drive the ball. We can't expect home runs, intermediate routes. Even if, when they see it, that he's not breaking the big one, they might come up a little bit more. Then we maybe take shots. But we didn't. Now,
is this a medical staff situation? Like, we've had so many guys that, like, look like they're clear and then they don't play.
No.
And then guys that...
He didn't report today and he didn't play.
Yeah. I don't know what's going on with that. Like, if guys are cleared to play, they should play. And if guys aren't cleared good enough to play, they should not play. Nope. This, like, fully dressed but just sit on the sideline bullshit just confuses the hell out of me, man.
Well, confuses you and makes you mad because it's like, if he's not ready, you know, you need to just have him completely sit out. You're asking him to get dressed, go through warm-ups and everything. Like, no. Don't even do that. Well, it's an element of surprise. I don't give a shit about the element of surprise.
If he's we're beyond that. We're not playing for a whole lot right now. No. Fuck the element of surprise. Do the right thing.
F-bomb calling again, folks. As Brian said, if you're in the car with your kids, earmuffs.
Earmuffs.
The whole time.
No, if they've got the iPad in the back seat, you got to say, "Here's the headphones. Put the headphones on. Daddy's gonna listen to his show."
And if you're gonna take the headphones off, you need to say, "Dad, really yeah. loud."
So announce yourself. Speak your truth.
All right, okay, let's go back to another running back. All right, today finally we see Jalen Holston get out. Jalen gets 2 touchdowns, 36 yards on 4 carries, 2 receiving for 11 yards, so 47 total yards. And you saw today, in my opinion, and I don't know what he was going through. Again, it's the medical staff again. Not on the injury report. He's been out there doing some kick returns. Why hasn't he been truly utilized as a true spell? Because he is literally – he is the version of Herbert that doesn't have the fifth gear.
Yeah.
Wow.
He's got much better vision than Blackshear between the tackles.
He can block
well. So, like, I don't get why he wasn't spellback number one from day one. Because that would have done 2 things. That would have been less of a drop-off when Herbert has to come off the field. Number 2, you actually utilize Raheem Blackshear the way he needs to be utilized as an offensive weapon or a slot receiver and not as a spell back or a change of pace back.
True.
And you keep it moving, man.
Again, it's like the preparations that we go into games. We don't know what the fuck we're doing.
Man, I look back to something that I said, like, after Blackshear got his waiver and there was that press conference with Foo and talked about, you know, "I hope you're ready. Coaching staff, you have done nothing to help this man out, to get him the plays that he needs to be successful." It's like you didn't watch the tape of the guy you brought in.
No, not at all.
Or if you did, you said, "All right, well, he did that well, but we're going to fucking square peg in a round hole this sumbitch."
Exactly. At least today they did put it back at punt return, where he got the majority of his yard when he ended up getting a big 21-yard return, essentially flipped the field for us. Although we go down and we kick the field goal on that, which just annoys you because you're like, "We're at the 49-yard line. Let's get it and go." Yeah. And there were a couple of times I give him credit. I saw people on social media say, "Well, why didn't he just catch that? You can't let that roll." Some of those punts you could see were coming in funky.
Yeah.
A good punt returner, a good to grunt punt returner will not try to catch those.
Because yeah, I mean,
they know only one thing can happen, and it's bad.
I mean, it's a damned if you do, damned if you don't situation, because we're coming off a week where a big play like that on special teams cost us a touchdown in a 1-score loss.
Yep.
And I'm sure some of that was in the back of his mind, it being the first week where he's been tabbed to be the guy back there. You know, you say you got to play whatever. That's obviously in his head. I mean, that's not an excuse, but it's definitely a reason.
Well,
you see a ball coming in like that, you're like, "We're still in a position where we can win this game. I'm not going to lose us this game in one play."
It's very true, man. It's very true. And again, a couple of those, you could just see when they came off the guys what they didn't look right. If it doesn't look right, don't try to get it, especially if the coverage is closing in good. Now, by all means, you've got 15 yards, take a risk.
Yeah. But, well, I mean, the style of the kick is different because they hold it long. It's a rugby style. It's not a hanger. It's very low in line drive, and those take weird bounces. So nothing about it is predictable.
Very, very true. All right. So finally, Brian, my prayer was answered. My prayer was answered today. We get a 3rd-and-short situation, and we finally bring in Quincy Patterson. We did it one time.
One time.
It converted, but we only did it once. And I just don't get it. There were some times today where, you know, third and five, third and six. You know what? If you're in a position where you think you're going to go for it, screw it. Put them in.
The worst. I mean, you ran quarterback power and quarterback lead on several third and seven and third and sixes anyway. Why not put the fucking battering ram in there to do it?
Yeah, those third and sixes and third and sevens. Yeah. You want, folks, I wish some of you could see the text chain when those happen. It's usually me and Brian are like, well, we're probably going for it here, right, Brian? And Brian's like, yeah. Why the hell are we trying to kick a 55-yard field goal? You just basically went for quarterback lead on third and six or third and seven. And it's like, a couple times it's like we ran it on plus side where we had a punt. It's just like, what are we doing? Like, it doesn't make any sense.
When I see that on third and long, I'm saying, oh, the coordinator is telling me that we're going for it on fourth down.
Yep.
That is what I read when I see someone make that call. And then consistently not doing that is mind boggling. After they ran that, they kicked a long ass field goal one time and then they punted the second time. Now, thankfully, our punter ended up backing him up deep. I think that was the one that ended up getting downed at the 5-yard line, and the defense held, got a 3-and-out. But still, I mean, that's a situation where you could potentially try to get some points by being aggressive and trying to get the first down, and you call what I consider a passive third down call and then don't go aggressive on fourth. Like, you can't go passive on third if you're not going for it on fourth.
Fourth. It's basically non-logical play calling. Like, no one would do that.
Also, your guy that has consistently been able to pull that shit off is Khalil Herbert, is not on the field in those situations.
Well, I mean, today was a inconsistency of the play calls. It was the perfect day where I swear to God, Brian, I think Justin Fuente was keeping a score. I think Fuente was calling some of those drives, and I think he won 21-3. We talked about it not only today while we were texting, watching the game. We talked about it before we got on today. There were some drives, and I read, Brian, the opening second down or second half drive. Go back and look at that drive, folks, if you recorded it or when it shows up. That doesn't look like a Brad Cornelison drive. There were other drives today with some of the pass concepts, some of the things, and I just saw the Hendon Hooker touchdown on ACC Network where it's Trey Turner, comes motions behind, then essentially gets on the left side of Hendon, runs a jet fake, and essentially Hendon lets it run and go up. There were times we did that on the next drive. We did nothing of that.
Yeah.
Nothing. So my conspiracy theory is Justin Fuente has basically proven his friend is a terrible play caller by calling opposites and essentially losing us the game.
Well, I like plays like that, and I'll tell you why. Because what they do is that they give the defense a different look even when you're running a play that you run 10 or 12 times a game. Right?
It's true.
So, it's essentially a quarterback power, right? But the window dressing makes it look different than the jet motion or the fake outside zone in the inverted veer, right? So it looks different, but it's the same thing that we've been seeing. So,
well, it's the other piece of you're making people for just a tenth of a second have to wait. Unless they truly trust their read, oh, it's going to be quarterback power. But if you read it as quarterback power and he handed it off and you stepped inside, Brian, you're a guard. I'm sure you love to see linebackers step inside when it's going to be something going outside because you get to that second level and put them on. There he is. Doing a little bit. You put them on. And in those type plays, if it goes to the house or it's a 50-yard gain, that linebacker's walking to the sideline, defensive coordinator saying, what the bleep are you doing? Why'd you immediately commit to the inside power? Well, coach, they did that before. Don't care. You've got to wait. You've got to wait and let the play develop.
Yep.
Because quarterback power getting 8 yards is a hell of a lot better than getting 50 the other way. And the other thing I didn't like about it, we saw in motion, and I don't think any time today did we pass out of it. But that's a setup, because if you run that and then you have Hendon take that one step forward, well, the linebackers are sucking up, so you're going to have nice intermediate crossers. Like Caleb Smith caught that 30-yard pass today he caught was beautiful.
Yes.
Across that about 15-yard crossing route, but it starts opening things up. So, you know, it's the same old thing. Today was different because there were some drives that looked, man, is this bad? I'm going to say this, Brian. There were drives today that looked professional.
Hey. And pretty much all three of our scoring drives where we got touchdowns looked
unreal.
Like something that you would want to see. There was consistency. There was seemed like a sequence that made sense. Most of the execution was there. And then, you know, we had a handful that just looked like we were lost. And then a handful where it felt like the coordinator crossed the 50 and just, again,
just forgets what to do.
Yeah, like
we're one of those teams that because we have some really good play designs, I'm trying to figure out how Oregon State scored. You see a touchdown pop up, and you're like, they didn't have the ball the last time I saw it. But really good play designs that even when they aren't perfectly executed, they get positive yardage. The most prime one today was that jet sweep. Late in the game, second and 10. Well, go through my notebook here because when I saw it run, it was a really good play. We ran, it was second and 10. I think we had taken an intermediate shot, missed it. But we run a jet sweep. Short side, the linebackers have to do what they do. They stay home. Now, they eventually flow out. They get him 5 yards down the field. It was one of those plays where it was set up to say, we're going to be second and 5 or second and 4. Yeah. And if they screw up and miss it, we're going to have a big game. That's what irritates me is when you know, okay, we just need you need to find the play that is going to get you in a position to convert. And on that drive, the next play, we didn't get it, but you saw the setup happen. And that's what I get more and more angry about.
Yeah, it's like that one was kind of on, you know, sometimes you just either don't execute and sometimes the defense just plays well. I mean, sometimes you got to give them credit. They have the right call to stop what you called. It wasn't necessarily a bad call, but,
yeah,
you know, here you are. But we had some drives that looked good like that. We have some drives that we scored on. And then we had some drives that just looked like we were lost, man. And that inconsistency is what is killing this team, man. It's killing us. But, I mean, I think we sucked all the marrow out of the offense here, man. Let's talk about the defense a little bit.
Best game they've played all season.
I agree.
If you had told me or Brian Thursday night, they're going to get to 25. First of all, I think we'd have been like, you're out of your damn mind.
Shit you say.
Yeah, bullshit. I mean, Brian, what did you see specifically today that really, why it was their best game?
The front seven played the most complete game they played this entire year.
Including Dax.
I'd say I'd almost go to the point to say especially Dax, which is something that y'all know I have not said this year.
We're not going to say Dax slander. We're Dax truthers.
Yes, we are Dax truthers. You know, we've been critical of the front seven.
Yeah.
And the secondary, but, you know, in particular, we've hammered the linebackers pretty bad this year. We've hammered the defensive tackles pretty bad. And I don't have a whole lot of slander for the front seven.
Well, man, they had six sacks today.
He had six sacks. You held a pretty potent offense to 25 points.
Under 400.
You only gave up one play of over 20 yards.
True. I mean, De'Aaron King's rushing stats today, have you seen those?
Pretty much non-existent, man.
He had 15 yards. Told me he held De'Aaron King to 15 yards. I'm thinking, well, me and Brian are saying, hey, we're glad to be wrong. Unfortunately, we didn't.
If you told me we held De'Aaron King to under 300 combined yards, I'd have told you you're full of shit. But we did.
We did. You know, Dak's definitely best game today. After the, it did not start out that way. That first drive, oh my, he missed fits. He went the wrong way. He blew essentially a coverage. Just looking where he was and where Devin Taylor was on one of those passes, he was in the wrong spot. And it was just like, here comes the same old Dax again. But then he turned it around. He got off some blocks.
Yeah.
He went to
got the off right some blocks. He did a good job of getting into the flat on several swings and passes that were going to the sideline, like quick outs.
One of his best plays today was did that scramble with De'Aaron King. He used leverage. He basically you saw that play, right?
Yeah.
He basically turned and he basically said, you're either going out of bounds or you're coming back in. King turned back in and he, you know, he had Dak there, but Dak got that arm. It slowed him and two guys were there.
Yep.
And when we talk, Brian has over the years educated me on leverage and he's like, that's what you do. Oh, you want to turn back upfield? Come on. Because people are going to be here real quick. And that's what happened.
Yep. Exactly, man.
And then,
he did a great job. I'm going to give another shout out to Hewitt, who wore the 25 today. He earned the 25 today.
Damn right.
Definitely his best game of the season by a large margin.
Or interior.
Yeah.
He's got a sack today. Kendricks blew up one of those sack early. He absolutely just, it was like pop, pop. He basically hand fought, got the guy down right up to De'Aaron King.
Yep. And, I mean, the defensive ends played well. Justice Reed had a good game. Barno had a good game. I mean, this was a complete effort. Rook probably had his best game of the season as well.
Rook looked like Rook today.
Yeah.
Getting to the spots, popping, not looking like maybe finally where he was out for COVID, maybe he finally got his football win back.
Yeah.
He looked like the guy we have known the last 3 years.
It's true, man. I'm going to call out two plays in the secondary that I would say were the two worst plays of the day. We've been positive. We've put on the icing here. I'm going to put a big old loogie right there on the on the cake. It's still edible. You know, depending on who you are, you might still eat it. I want to start with the ball where King just kind of chucked it towards the sideline. Chapman was playing underneath the route. And instead of giving ground and getting a pick, held ground and then tried to jump and make a play. And instead of ended up either an interception or fourth down, they get a first down on a third and long.
Yeah, that he looked
Like he apparently he just gauged how much air was going to be on that ball completely wrong. And then was just in a position where he couldn't make a play and tried to jump late. That's the only thing I could think of there, man. But he definitely misread the ball in the air. The second one, I'm not sure the responsibility here, but it was on the only big play of the game, the long touchdown that gave them the lead. Based on what I saw, it looked like they were almost in a all-out blitz cover three, and they ran that RPO, and Taylor just did not get enough depth.
No, he was – I mean, you could see he was 5 yards in front of where that pass was.
Yeah, I could be wrong on what the coverage was. It might have been some sort of man responsibility across the board on that blitz, but
yeah,
it looked like he should have had kind of the intermediate to deep third since we were bringing the house, and he was just too shallow. And we got beat on kind of that quick post.
That's what it was. Because it looked like as soon as that ball was snapped, when he hit that third step, he chucked it. Like, he immediately saw no one was in that zone. And the way the leverage was set up, again, the way the leverage was set up was, it, I think, like Brian's saying, it's blown coverage, is the way it was set up, it looks like he was trying to turn him inside to say, I'm going to turn you inside and there's going to be a zone. You're going to go right into a zone with someone there. Correct?
It felt like he had, because he was running with him, but he was running with him in almost a trail responsibility. So it seemed like it was kind of a cover three with everybody underneath going after the quarterback. And just Taylor didn't have enough depth where when the post crossed out of the corners zone into the middle, he just wasn't there to make a play. And it almost, you know, from other perspectives, it might have been a man responsibility, but the way he got beat kind of right away, it didn't look like. It looked like he thought he had help inside.
Gotcha. All right, let's go back. Let's kick the loogie off. Because again, best defense game of the day. Jay Ham's best schematic game, without a doubt. His best play calling game. The blitzes were unique. And you said something, and I'll say what you said to me about what we did today, that if we had done some of these other games, we might not be 4-4 right now.
Yeah, I mean, I talked about it a little bit on Thursday, too. I was saying that this defense consistently throughout the year has not been dictating terms to the offense, and it felt like we finally started doing that today. Whether it was some of the stunts with the defensive line or the blitzes that we were bringing, it felt like we were actually saying, you're not going to fucking score. We're going to hit you. We're going to knock your dick in the dirt. It felt like a defense that, again, I said it, they haven't feared us all year. It looked like, hey, you might think twice before doing some things against this one.
Exactly.
And it was the first time I could really say that. I mean, you know, I'm not saying that we're turning a corner on defense, but I definitely think in terms of effort and, again, dictating terms, this was definitely the best effort of the year by far.
100%. And you know what? If this is the type of defense Justin Hamilton wants to run, I think he can be highly successful in this era of college football. With, you know, there's going to score points. I mean, look at the track meet that broke out today between Wake and UNC.
Yep.
Makes me feel better about both those games. Let's not get into that. We'll have a recap show in January where we can just we're gonna drink. We're gonna get a liter of our choice, sit 6 feet apart at one of our houses in the cold, get drunk and do it.
There we go.
Yeah, our wives would. Well, you know.
I mean, we'll still do it. We just might have to pay for it.
Exactly. Anybody out there has couches, please let us know. Right. Brian, you know, again, loss today brings the Hokies to 4-4. And after, you know, essentially starting 4-2, going into what we thought, okay, after Liberty, it's going to be our toughest stretch. If we can get to Miami 5-1, we can do some things because you feel confidence. Yeah. But if 4-4, it's not that way. And this is sort of our take, y'all, and we're going to just get into some stuff on the coaching situation. And we kind of mentioned it last week, but we've crafted this statement. It's our opinion that if the money can be found, and it's $10 million, so if you hit the lottery tonight and you're a Virginia Tech fan, get ready to start the check. If the money can be found, this is going to be the last year of the Justin Fuente era. Now, who stays and who goes on this staff, let that be up to the next head guy. Because, you know, I think, Brian, me and you both feel that there are a few coaches on this staff that if the next guy walks in and he doesn't have, like, his ace for that position, there's some guys that could be retained.
Yeah, I mean, there's probably a handful. Let's start with the guy that we've been giving a whole lot of love the last couple of weeks, James Chabest.
100%.
I think he's probably done consistently the best job on the staff all year. His only negative plays have been bad decisions and execution by the players, not any calls that he's made. I think he's done a really good job of getting his guys prepared to do the things they need to do, especially when it's crunch time.
Yep.
So, yeah, I would definitely consider retaining him. I'd also look at a couple guys on the defensive side of the ball. You guys might laugh at me for saying that, but just based on their ties to the program, their ties to Virginia, retaining Justin Hamilton as a position coach and Daryl Tapp as a position coach would probably be a good decision.
I'm with you on all three of those, especially Chabest. I mean, Chabest has been one of the best special teams coordinators over the last two decades, without any question. And depending on who the hire is, you're probably not going to find someone as good as him to just handle that for you. The Tapp and Ham thing makes sense. People even said it that Ham was—he probably wasn't quite right for this.
Not even quite right, just not quite ready.
Yeah.
I think he's right, but I think he's not seasoned enough to be ready to take over that degree of responsibility, especially without. I mean, we thought that the Clay's hire was kind of a slam dunk in terms of easing him into the thing, and that's turned out to be a fucking clown show. No disrespect to Tracy Clay's in his career, but I don't think it's been a good fit for him here.
No, not at all. And, you know, missing, again, we said it, the entire team missing the, you know, spring ball, summer conditioning stuff, true camp, starting the season in Labor Day, not 3-4 weeks later. You know, I think they could be kept. Tapp, I don't care who the coach and hire is next. They have to keep him. They have to. Because he lives it, he breathes it. You know he can be great. I'm going to throw two more names out there for you.
Okay.
You tell me what you think. You've got your three guys. I like those guys. There's truly two I feel like could be kept. But two more names that interest me. One is Ryan Smith.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
He was one of the 30s under 30 per 247 last year. And the other one.
I think I know where you're going with here.
Adam Leichenberg, a running back coach, usually, as people look, one of the easier positions to fill, but more of his connections with junior colleges. He looks like he knows how to find guys, knows how to do the portal stuff well, where it's like, you know, that's an easy hire. You automatically say you're the JUCO guy. That's your territory. You're not touching anything else in recruiting. Look at the JUCOs, find what we need. What do you think about those two?
I think those two you can make a case for. I think you could also maybe make a case for Coach Vice with what he's did with the offensive line. Trying to find good fit guys, doing good at keeping guys rotational where you've got guys that can play in different areas when you need to, when a guy goes down or when a guy's not getting the job done. So I like what he's done. And again, guys, this is all contingent on who the ultimate big guy hire is and what type of coordinators they bring along. Because obviously, you know, if the guy they hire is a cornerbacks coach, or if the DC they hire is a cornerbacks coach, the chance of Smitty hanging around is slim to none. But, you know, if it's not that case, then, you know, I think that's when you start looking at some of these guys staying around. Since we're talking about retaining and not, let's talk about who the next guy should be. What are you thinking, man? Who's your 1A?
Well, the 1A is without a doubt it's Luke Fickell.
Okay.
I mean, what he's done at Cincinnati and the way he scraped himself up after kind of getting thrown into the fire, you know, with the whole trestle thing, which is, you know, I think a decade ago now, but how he essentially has stepped himself up and just kind of turned that program into legitimately right now the best group of five, yep. You know, school.
And probably think, by a significant margin.
Yeah. And it's not no slander on UCF or anything, or, you know, even Josh Heupel down there. He could be on a short list eventually. But I think his mentality, he's a defensive guy. He plays nose. He played nose guard at Ohio State back in the 90s. You know, 33-13 as a head coach. He's 33-13 as a head coach, even with the Ohio State 6-7 year in there. You take out that year, the guy's 27-6.
It's impressive, man. It's impressive.
And that's a 4-8 his first year at Cincinnati. He's a younger guy, you know, he's only 47 years old. Got a long time left to coach. He's the first call.
Okay.
Do you agree? Would he be your first call?
He would be my first call as well. I think just what he brings to the table, his resume combined with the way he works, and what he's been able to do in a short period of time there at Cincinnati. I feel like we've seen enough of what he's done there as well. So it's not like such a small sample size where, you know, you say, well, maybe that's this or that's that. I think we've seen enough where, you know, we know that that this is all him getting this thing done. So, yeah, he would definitely be my 1A. 1B is going to be, for me, Todd Grantham.
Oh, man, that's a hot button.
I mean, if you can get along away from the abrasiveness that kind of comes with that name, in terms of what's happened with some other staffs and fan bases, I think you can really, it's really a slam dunk hire. I mean, you got a Hokie, a guy that's coached here before, a guy that understands recruiting in Virginia, a guy that how he rubs people aside has always been good in the living room with recruits.
True.
And the fact that potentially if you make that hire, you also get Torian Gray as your defensive coordinator.
That's a big one, because I think he could get Torian to come. Grantham also, he went to Tech, also grew up in Pulaski, so literally from the region. Yeah.
Hometown boy.
Hometown boy. Essentially, it's another, you know, you say what you want to say, it's a Frank hire. But I like him as well. Again, the Torian thing's big, because you tell half this fan base Torian's coming back, but you got to deal with Todd. Half of them would say, screw it. Torian's that good.
Yeah.
But it's the whole thing of he's coached everywhere. He coached 10 years in the NFL. He's been in Big Ten country. He's been in the SEC now, you know, basically of the last 10 years, 7 of the last 10 years with Georgia, Mississippi State, and now Florida.
Okay.
You talk about the guys who are on staff. The one thing you would not have to worry about with him having that many times played, or having coached at that many places, excuse me, you would find solid hires at probably every single position. There would be somebody, even though he's abrasive and they know he can be an a-hole, you know what? I know he'll work hard. I know he'll put good things in place. So I wouldn't be opposed to that. Now, I think it's one of those things, too, if you're talking about a target demographic to get fundraising up, he's not going to get your mass. Right? He's not going to get the mass of people. He is in his mid-50s. He's 54. So he's not late 60s. He's at that age. A lot of times, guys who work for years and years get their first job.
He's a potential 10-year hire.
He's a 10-year hire. But it's also, when you're talking about a guy who's that age, you kind of start thinking about, these are the people who were there when the stuff was bad and it went good. You hire him, maybe some of those people who are making significant amounts of money all over the country who are that age.
Yeah.
Instead of donating $5,000 a year, they donate $20,000. I like Todd. Todd played when I was there. I remember Todd. Todd coached when I was there. I remember Todd. Potentially helping what you've been saying and what we've been saying numerous times. The hire can be great. If the investment's not there, it could go sideways.
Yeah.
All right. We're going to do five, guys. The third one, Brian's still on the podium for this guy. I like the guy. Brian's still on the podium for him, though.
Yeah, I like Marcus Freeman. And I only say Marcus Freeman. I think he's a good look if you're not able to get Luke or Todd, because Luke potentially could go to some sort of blue blood school that is trying to flip the script.
Yeah, did you see what just happened to Michigan today?
Yeah. Yeah.
Did you see what happened to Penn State today?
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's some potential for big blue blood schools that are on the rocks right now to make a splash hire. So Luke Fickell could be gone regardless of how bad we want him.
True.
So if we're looking at another guy, let's look at the defensive coordinator for those up and coming Bearcats that are, you know, climbing the ladder of the top 25. Also a linebackers coach.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I like him. I like what he's been able to do with recruiting in the short time that he's been with the Bearcats. I like that he seems like a guy that can really relate to a lot of the youth in the areas that we recruit. So I think that would be good. He doesn't have a big history of recruiting in the state, in the region, but he's done well when he's dipped his toes in there. And he's done well across the board for recruiting when he's been out there. So I like it. You know, it's not a sexy hire, but I think he's a young guy that can relate with the players a lot better and bring some interesting philosophies on defense that even Jay Ham's not exploring at this point. So I think it's a win-win on that front.
All right. The one reason he wasn't as high for me as he was for Brian, y'all, because we clarified, is my worry, Brian, and I've told Brian this, my worry if you hire him and you lose Fickell, people are going to be like, you missed your big guy. That's why you had to hire him. And the way I feel some people would say is, well, if you're going to hire some defensive coordinator from Cincinnati, I'm not giving you my money. And it's just one of those things where, again, people that follow it, you see how good Cincinnati's been. He's 34 years old. You're talking about relating. Now, on the other hand, hiring somebody that young, a lot of young professionals out there might be like, I love this hire. Yeah, I only can give $100 a year. Cool. But when there's 10,000 of those stroking checks for $100 a year, that will help with things significantly. And, you know, you kind of look at it and say, with him, it's kind of like the Fickell thing. At his age right now, there's only one place he'd probably go to that's P5 wise, and that would be Ohio State.
Yeah.
His age right now, Fickell's an Ohio State guy, was that interim job. But once he went there, was defensive coordinator under Urban for a few years, went to Cincinnati. He kind of knows coaching his alma mater as a head coach is gone. And for Freeman, it's still the option out there. Now, I threw Brian a ginormous curveball here. because I mentioned one guy and Brian was like, And then I threw this name out. Jamie Chadwell. For everybody at home, I'm going to give you a few seconds to go on your smartphones there, put in Jamie Chadwell in your search engine. Okay. Jamie Chadwell is the current head coach and offensive coordinator of Coastal Carolina. And obviously this year they are having a great season. And he's actually been a head coach for well over or just over a decade, starting in D2, then moving to the Gulf South Conference, then moving to the Big South, where at Charleston Southern, 2 years in the playoffs. Then came to Coastal, a couple rough years, but finally got them going in the right direction. I like him for a couple reasons. A, his age. He's like his early 40s. Some people will say, well, Fuente is too. Okay, that doesn't help us. But my bigger thing is where he's done his primary coaching is down in South Carolina. So for me, I think he's a guy that probably gets the region.
Okay.
He probably gets Georgia. He probably gets North Carolina. He probably gets Virginia. He played out at East Tennessee State. Probably gets that region. Probably gets, you know, more of our regional footprint here. And I just feel that it would be one of the – this is the long shot, right?
Okay. Yeah.
If you're talking money-wise, I've been trying to find his – current salary for the last couple minutes, and it's not been there. So let me find it. Efforting. All right. His current deal. You ready for it, Brian?
Thanksgiving turkey is only served once a year because of how bland and dry it is.
And that happens.
We're keeping that in.
Yeah, you keep that in. There we go. Coach's salaries. He's not making much, Brian. So let me just get here.
I love ads so much.
Oh, they just pop. Like, what the frick is that? He is making. Ready?
Yep.
Now we can get him for $2 million a year. You know why?
Why?
His current salary is $375,000.
Yeah, we could get him for $3 million a year, $2 million a year, $1 million a year. I'm just kidding. I don't think we do that.
Yeah, I see a guy that understands the region. You've seen him build a team. Financially, if you feel like you have to cut some things, you're not going to have to pay him out the wazoo out of the gate. So, you know.
Let me throw a little caveat on that here. Okay. So you said Jamie Chadwell. I'm going to throw someone that's kind of essentially similar in this same vein here.
I know you.
You know who I'm going to say it. Will Healy.
Okay, Will Healy, yeah. Down at UNCC.
Yeah.
Similar, yeah. Similar guy. A little bit younger.
A little bit younger. Not as many stops at this point. Only been a head coach since 2016. But his annual salary is $755,000. So that's another one where $2 million will get the job done. And another young guy similar to Freeman that can really relate with these kids, I think, and do a good job with the recruiting. Alma mater is University of Richmond, so understands the area. Coaching in Charlotte. You know, was a coach at Austin Peay before he went to UNC Charlotte. Sure. You know, I don't think it's a slam dunk. I don't think it's sexy, but I think similar to Jamie Chadwell, it might be a pretty decent run there.
No, it's true, man. And the one that I threw out there to you, and these guys did not, they're on our list, but they didn't go top five because when you consensus things up, you have to be honest. I love Billy Napier. Brian's kind of out on him. I don't know why, you know. That's the best part of this. Brian didn't agree with that. I didn't like Healy that much because I think Healy's too young, and he's literally having to build a program from the base. But I like Napier. Coached at Clemson, knows that region, been down in Louisiana, doing very good down there. Brian, I'm going to give you one more name. You ready?
And this is the name
you have to throw out. Your old coach.
Yeah. I mean, I can speak for a little bit on him, man. When I was at Hamden Sydney, he coached D-line 1 year and tight ends for 1 year. Definitely like a player's coach. understands the relationships. To give you guys an idea of the type of coach you're dealing with, he's a guy that was enrolled at Hamden Sydney while he was coaching. He said, I don't want to play, I want to coach. And so as essentially a peer, he was commanding that respect of players and getting the job done at a high level. Had one of the best years for our tight ends, the years he was coaching tight ends. We had one that was all ODAC that year. So he knows his shit, and he's had success at pretty much every stop since then. Nobody in the fan base is going to say, yes, let's hire another Memphis coach after Fuente and after what's going on with Mike Norvell down at FSU. But if you just want my opinion on the guy, I think he'd be a good hire.
Well, I mean, he coached in Georgia high schools. He coached in Virginia. So obviously he's probably got some inroads here, even though it was 20 years ago. He was an NFL coach. He coached down at UCF. He was out at Arizona State. He was at Toledo. And then he's been at Memphis for the last 4 years under Norvell. So guy has a ton of experience. And clearly you talk about I was in school wanting to coach and then makes his way to the NFL for, better part of half a decade. It does say something about him. All right, Brian, there's a big elephant in the room.
There is, man.
And
this is one, if you throw it on the Twitter timeline, you're going to get either guys that love it so much that it's ridiculous, or guys that will be adamantly against it. Who is it, Curtis?
It's Shane Beamer.
And it's
one of those funny things where the consensus is he grew up here, he played here, his dad was a legend here, he gets the culture. The other half, he ain't done shit. What's he done? He's not even a coordinator anywhere. And I don't think Shane is he a great probably football X's and O's coach? No. Maybe on special teams.
If we hired him, he would pretty much do what his dad did, is the BHC and coach special teams.
It's true. But the whole thing is, and Brian, since you coached, so many people think head coach has to do one thing. You know, they've got to have one side of the ball or the other. Some of the best coaches aren't X's and O's geniuses at any of it, right? But they're unbelievable motivators. They're unbelievable organizers.
They're good CEOs.
Yeah. And essentially,
they're experts at managing the works. They're not experts at any one discipline.
And with him, it's one of those things. He's been an assistant head coach. He was an assistant head coach with his dad. He was a special teams coordinator for Kirby Smart. And for the last three seasons, he's been an assistant head coach for Lincoln Riley in coaching tight ends. He's only making $470,000. I think he would take a home deal and discount between $2 and $2.5 million. If he does that, you can go get million-dollar coordinators.
Yeah, I mean, let's go ahead and get this out of the way. I feel like unless guys are hell-bent on certain coordinators, we need to be paying $1 million for our coordinators.
It's true.
And, you know, if we look at what's going on right now with the two coordinators that we have right now, we're kind of getting what we paid for. We're getting a guy that has potential but is very green on the defensive side, and we're getting a guy that has a pretty good grasp of scheme but is very poor at preparing his team to play and at getting consistent play on the field, both in the play calling front and the actual execution.
It's the honest truth, man.
So, you know, we talk about all that, and now we need to say, if we're going to take a step forward, we need the salaries for those coordinators to be competitive with the teams that we want to beat consistently.
It's true, man. But the other thing with Shane, and Shane is kind of similar to it's similar to Todd. Shane's been coaching 20 years. And the folks who do knock it and say, well, it's dumb. He coached at Georgia Tech in 2000. He coached at Tennessee under Fulmer as a GA 2001, 2002, 2003. He was at Mississippi State with Sylvester Croom 04, 05, 06. He was down with the old ball coach from 2007 to 2010. He clearly was here with his dad, again with Kirby at Georgia and with Lincoln. I think, and again, if you think about how his dad hired people and his dad's personality, and I know his dad's not all him, you know, Frank coached almost a decade before, well, actually over a decade before he got here, right?
Yeah.
I just want to do something real quick. And again, I like doing this stuff live because it's kind of fun.
Everding.
Frank Beamer graduated in 1968. From 1972 to 1987, he coached at Maryland, the Citadel, Murray State. He was with Bobby Ross some of those years. And with Murray State, he was actually the defensive coordinator before he came. You know, you talk about some of the guys that he pulled in. He pulled in Wiles was a guy he coached. Bud was a guy he coached. You know, just because a guy hasn't went to coordinator or you know, he's been coaching 20 years, you know, look at Indiana right now. You see what Indiana's doing?
Yeah.
Look at that. That's an Indiana guy. He was a coach elsewhere from 1992 up to 2016 when he became the defensive coordinator. Coach got fired. He took over interim. They hired him. He's built them up in the last 4 years, and they beat Michigan, and they beat Penn State.
It's true.
In the day. So don't just because a guy's not been what the coordinator or a coach somewhere else, don't let that knock.
Yeah, I'm probably not as high on Shane as you are, or some folks on the timeline have been. But I'm not opposed to it. I think it would be we talked about the CEO perspective. I think it would be a very good choice from that front because I think he does handle those aspects of the job well. I think he would be good with donors. What I don't know is what concerns me, I guess, is more of the recruiting side of it, just because there were very big ups and downs for him while he was on the staff.
All right, hold on. Can I tell you the way to solve that?
Yep.
Comes in, goes to dad, and you conference call Lauren Johnson, and you say, Lauren, we want you on this staff. Here's $300,000. You don't think that would solve some of his recruiting woes in certain places in this state?
That would help grabbing probably – keeping one more assistant from the 757 might help, and
you mean keep it
moving.
I think it's a potential there, but I also think you talk about donors. Shane, there are some people they can say what they want to say. The people who are going to give the $100 to $200 a year that are casual Virginia Tech fans, and they are, and some of you might be casual listening to us, and that's fine because that's your priorities, and that's awesome. But I think Shane could touch every single piece of the base. His dad to leverage the older donors, himself to sort of essentially to grant them up to the our age folks. You could grab those. And then you see Shane and how he acts, and you see Shane's full of energy, and you see his personality. And I feel like he would be one of those innovative guys to get the kids graduating to become members of the Hokie Club.
Yeah.
So – yeah, so
and I mean he's for whatever small role it was, you can also say that he was on the 99 team.
Yeah, he was the long snapper, man. Always remember this, folks, about the 99 team. If Shane Beamer was a shitty long snapper, the miracle in Morgantown never happens.
Bingo. Bingo. For whatever that's worth, that's going to count right there.
It counts. Anything else breaking since we've been on here for, an hour and 20 minutes or so?
Hour and 10 minutes.
Okay, not terrible. Not as bad as last week. I'm not as drunk as last week.
Guys, we've saved you guys an extra 20 minutes here. We're not pushing hour 40.
Nah, we appreciate you guys listening to that show. But I'm not seeing anything breaking. I am watching some Pac-12 After Dark on my end here, seeing Washington go up 17-7. There's a couple others. There's another MAC game on, which I think I'm going to probably turn in early tonight. Master starts at 10 tomorrow. And I do want to watch that as long as I can. If there's nothing else breaking, Brian, let's wrap it.
Yes, sir.
All right, that takes care of this episode of the Boundary Corner Podcast. My name is Curtis Wilson.
I'm Brian Siegler.
We do ask you follow us on Twitter, Facebook. Also subscribe on your favorite podcast source, Amazon, Spotify, Apple Podcasts. Please rate, review, leave us messages, give us the 5-star, ask us questions. Some people wanted to know about Quincy. We touched that a brief bit tonight. You know, that's what we're here for. We want to talk about it. If there's something you guys are interested in, let us know. DM the Boundary Corner Podcast Twitter page. If you've got a question that you want to put out there, own it. And as always, we let our buddy from the NRV, our hometown boy, Jason Long, play us out. Please check him out on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. And on November 19th, he will be playing in Roanoke at Bloom Restaurant and Wine Bar at 5:30. As always, let's go.
Hokies.